Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Be sure to check it out when you get a chance. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. It comes on by email on Sunday, and the blog, which comes every day, Monday through Friday. And if you're not familiar with RSS, Really Simple Syndication, which is the, or I think it's Real Simple Syndication. It is really simple, though, folks. You can do that. You can find out more about it at our website. Go to the blog, go to the homepage, smallbusinessadvocate.com, and then go to the homepage there and click on the blog, and you'll see a little link that says RSS, and there's a question mark by one of them. You can click there and find out more about RSS and how it works. And I'm emphasizing that, folks, because I think RSS is a technology that you ought to know about. And I want to talk about that again in just a little bit. But before we do, I want to get back to the topic at hand. And unfortunately, we're having a little technical difficulty getting hooked up with Sally Pipes. Hopefully she'll join us in just a little bit. But she was going to join us, and she still may, to talk to us about the avian flu. I'm sure many of you have been keeping up with this. You've been listening to the various experts talking about this. What's happening across the world, across the globe, and you probably heard the president speak about this. Now, think about this, folks. If the president of the United States makes an address to the nation, to the world, indeed, about an issue, a pandemic, they're calling it, a potential pandemic, an influenza pandemic. That could be out there. When the president of the United States, when something's got his attention to that level, I think we should all be pretty serious about it. I don't think we should be frightened of it. I don't think we should be paralyzed about it. It's one of those things that could happen. It hasn't been that long. In fact, there was a great pandemic, an influenza pandemic, back in 1918. Hundreds of thousands of Americans died that year. And there was another one, a lesser one in 57, and a lesser one in, 68, I think. So we've had these for a long time and have been having them for a long time. So a lot of the experts say that we're due, that that could happen. And one of the problems we've got with these pandemics is that even though they seem to be starting in some of the more primitive regions of the world, some of the Asian areas, and I'll talk about that in a minute about why they are happening there. The problem we've got today is the mobility of human beings around the planet, and people are just moving around an awful lot. You get on an airplane, and not only could you be transported from one part of the world to the other if you're infected and you infect somebody when you get there, but you could do it on the airplane. And I don't know about you, but I've actually gotten sick from basically riding on an international flight before. It can happen. It does happen. And so imagine, all I got was like some kind of a rhinovirus. Imagine if it was another kind of a virus, like an avian virus or something like that. So one of the things I want to talk about, though, and even though Sally's not here to talk to us about it, I've been doing a little research of my own. I've been reading some articles, and a lot of what I'm going to talk to you about now is from an article by a guy named Donald Burke, who's a professor of international health and epidemiology at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Donald Burke, Dr. Burke, wrote a pretty good article in the Wall Street Journal, and here's some of the things that he said that I think is kind of interesting. As you know, as you may know, you may not have memorized it, but you've heard the virus is called H5N1. Now, let me explain a little bit about what that means. I thought this was interesting. The H, let's see if I can say this, hemagglutinin, that's it. It's a protein. And that protein allows the virus to attach to and enter one of your cells, or enter your cells. That's how the virus gets to you. And then there is another protein, neuraminidase, I guess is the way to say that. It's the N, that's the N protein in the H5N1 virus. The N protein is what allows the virus to exit your cells. So what you've got, there are a lot of H's and a lot of N viruses out there. There are a lot of different birds have lots of viruses. And this is the scary part for a lot of folks. You and I may not have known this, but birds, especially, you know, the migratory birds, they have these, the viruses. Many of them are infected with a virus. But when the H and the N gets together, where the virus can enter the cell and exit the cell, that's when it becomes, I guess you could say, that's when it becomes contagious. Now, up to now, the virus has been contracted from bird to bird, chicken to chicken, duck to geese, etc., etc. And human beings have contracted the virus. There are 100 or so cases around the world, of which about half have died. It's about a 50% mortality rate, which is very, very frightening, considering that the 1918 virus influenza outbreak, that pandemic, was only about a 1 or 2% mortality rate. So think about that. All the millions of people that died across the world in 1918, that was a 1 to 2% mortality rate. This one so far is 50%, and that's what's gotten everybody's attention. But so far, the infection has been going from bird to bird and from bird to human. Now, getting back to what I said a minute ago about where these things have originated, typically in Asia, it's been starting in Asia and China, Southeast Asia. Vietnam is one of the first places they found this, where people were dying who had the avian flu. Now, these people remind me, in some ways, how farm life is, or was at least in this country. I grew up on the farm. We had lots of chickens. They roamed around free range, basically. And we prepared our own chickens from our farm. So we handled the chickens, the live chickens, and cleaned them and everything. That's what these folks are doing. And I'll talk about this a little bit more. I've got some more information on this from the article that Donald Burke wrote, and I'll talk about that after these messages. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
I'm still not certain that you love me. Every time you hold me, I'm still not certain that you care.
We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I know you're going to be thrilled to find out that Sally Pipes is here. She's the president and CEO of the Pacific Research Institute. She's an expert on the avian flu and some of the reasons why we do have cause to worry. Sally, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. Sally, I was just talking to the audience a little bit about the avian flu. I was just pointing out to them some of the details. I was just saying that why it's called H5N. The H allows the virus to get into the cells. The N allows it to get out. And I was also talking about the fact that it must be pretty serious for the government and the president to have the attitude that he has. And a lot of people might be thinking that the government and the industry, the medical industry, are maybe being a little proactive because this is something that hasn't affected a lot of people and it's a long way from our shores. But you actually have a different view of this, don't you?
Well, I do. I mean, as we know, last week the president had a major press conference and came out and said that you know, we were not prepared. And he outlined a national strategy to safeguard against the danger of the pandemic influenza, and you know, is trying to get an authorization for $7.1 billion of funding. And of course, that funding comes from us, the taxpayers. It doesn't come from government. But you know, we knew. I mean, think back to last year when there was a flu shortage. We knew we had problems with vaccine makers. We didn't have enough in this country. Think back to a couple of years ago when the SARS epidemic was, you know, in China and in Asia, and it came to Canada, where I'm from. But, you know, years ago, back in the late 50s, in 57, we had 26 companies in this country that were supplying the standard children's vaccine market. Today, there are only four. And 30 years ago, we had 10 firms that were manufacturing the seasonal flu vaccine. Mm-hmm. And today, there are only two. And, you know, last year when we had the shortage of the seasonal flu vaccine, there was a huge outcry. Chiron, a California-based vaccine maker, had a contamination problem at their British plant, which curtailed supply. So why is it that we used to have a very buoyant vaccine industry in this country, and today we don't? And yet, on the other side, the pharmaceutical industry, you know, most of the major companies in Europe that were doing research and development all came to America to do their research and development. We have a very strong R&D, where the industry spends about $33 billion a year. Most of the wonderful new drugs that allow us to live longer and healthier lives come out of the pharmaceutical industry and come out of America. So why do we not have a strong vaccine industry? Well, there are three reasons. One is litigation. You know, vaccine makers finally said, you know, we just, you know, there are so many lawsuits and frivolous lawsuits that, you know, if you look back to the 70s when there were 800 lawsuits filed against the maker of the whooping cough vaccine, and it turned out that that was all, they were false suits. They did not cause brain damage. So litigation is a huge factor, and the president in his press conference the other day said we had to make some changes so that these frivolous lawsuits, you know, can
we've
be
got
stopped.
We've got to get a handle on tort reform. Has to happen. There's no question about it. Our lives are being put in danger by predatory legal practices by the plaintiff bar, and there's no question about that. I think we all know that. But let me ask you a question. What can be done now? Let's say, you know, what's past is past, Sally. What is your recommendation to us as a people, as Americans, for example, just us here in the United States? What should we be doing now to get ready for the possibility of an avian flu pandemic?
Well, I think one of the things that we can do is with the Food and Drug Administration, and, you know, the FDA has been under a lot of pressure lately because of Vioxx and Celebrex and a number of drugs, so they're becoming increasingly cautious. I think, you know, there are two vaccines that are in the making right now in trial. One is made by Sanofi Aventis, and the other is made by Chiron. I think we have to let the FDA allow them to streamline these vaccines through the process.
We need these to go through and as quickly as possible. There's a lot of red tape at the FDA, isn't there?
There is, and so
is there too much?
Well, I believe there is too much. I mean, there are two, the FDA, there are two roles for the FDA. One is the safety issue, and one is the efficacy issue. And the FDA has moved much more into efficacy, and I think their real main role should be in safety. So I think, you know, we really need to allow these drugs that are in trial and these vaccines seem to be doing well in early trial. You know, it's we need to be prepared, and even if they streamline the process, if this H5N1 or avian flu virus mutates and moves to people, this can move very quickly.
I mean, well, I was just saying before we went to the break that it goes from animal to animal now. It's gone from animal to human now. It has not gone from human to human. When that happens, that's when everything turns to mush, isn't it?
Right, exactly. And, you know, you can look back, you know, to the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic, which was blamed for 50 million deaths. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, is predicting that could kill between this, you know, an avian flu pandemic could kill between, you know, 90,000 and 200,000 Americans. You know, we're always ready. America is a land of opportunity, and I just think it's such a shame because of litigation.
That we haven't. It's a shame that we haven't already taken advantage of this. Sally, we got a lot more to talk about. Will you continue to keep us posted on this issue?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you very much. Give us your website, Sally, please.
www.pacificresearch.org.
Pacificresearch.org. There's a lot more. Sally's written a lot of articles about this, folks. If you want to read more about that, you can find them there and also in papers around the country. Thanks, Sally. See you next time.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Quick break. Right back with Steve Chandler. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Cannot be denied.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.